From the land of Grand Teutoburg City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 11th day of October 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. It's the day before USDA report day. It comes out at 11 o'clock Central Time tomorrow morning. We'll have all the details on our website right then, right there at willag.org, or you can follow me on Twitter if you'd like for the same kind of information. My handle is at Commodity Week. Today, we'll look forward into those numbers and talk about what's been happening in Chicago. That with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Discuss the agricultural energy sector with Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services. Take a look at the news for the afternoon and the weather forecast, too. That with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Farmers in beans today there?
Yeah, they're flying along over in the bean fields over here. We are seeing a few lines to dump beans now, but the corn lines have been real short at the elevators over here. I think everybody is really trying to push to get the beans done before this rain. We've seen tremendous yields over here, most of them probably ranging from the mid to upper 60s as far as up as 80 bushel yields in the counties over here.
Will USDA be able to take all of this into account tomorrow, and how much do you suppose they might raise the average yield, and does acreage change, and how much does real production go up?
Well, we'd be a lot smarter tomorrow at this time, answering those questions. But today, with our rough guesses, we think that anything over 52.5 bushel yield is going to be a little bit bearish to the market. Anything less than 52 is probably going to be neutral to friendly on that, Todd. And we don't look for the acreage to go up too much on the beans, but we do look for them to increase the acreage some on the corn. Basically, the one thing we've got going for us on the corn is that our export inspections already for the year are up 79% over a year ago. But yet, when we look at all the extra acres we've got, we've still got an awfully big carryover coming in on this year at the end. But the one bright spot we're seeing is Barclays. The financial group estimate there's $54 billion has come into the commodity market this year. And we're sort of back at the same levels for that fund money that we had back in 2009. So that is a very positive thing, because we are on the lower end of these commodity prices, and maybe we can get a little pop out of that.
So in 2009, we were seeing commodity prices move sharply higher at that point. Is that right? I got to think about that. Or in the spring of 2009.
Well, we started.
Maybe? Yeah.
We started moving up after the 2008 debacle. So.
My question here is. Is there a difference in the fund money coming in now? Is it fleeing something at this point, or is it coming in because they think value is here and they're ready to push the market higher?
Well, I think that there's a little bit of concern that the stock market's got a little bit toppy up in here. We're not seeing quite the economic growth and some of that we'd like to continue to see to keep raising the stock market. But I think that overall, basically the statements that were made was, we're seeing energy start to turn up, and they're generally a leading indicator. And of course, along with that, then the commodities have been the corn, beans, the wheat, all that have been very cheap. We're on the low end of our cycles as far as things have been over the last 7 or 8 years, and they are looking for values. So I think it is a little bit of strength coming in that way, and hopefully that can pop these up to where maybe a farmer can make a living rather than go broke farming. So,
despite all of the bins that producers and storage have built over the last several years, this crop is a big one for both corn and soybeans. They won't have the ability to store it all. Some of it will have to go to town. They'll have maybe a few days in between the time they deliver and when they need to make a decision about pricing or storing. What should they do on both corn and soybeans, in your opinion?
Well, I think, as we look at that, Todd, it's sort of the hard decision of, do I pay the storage to the elevator, or do I just cash it out at the wider basis here and look and see what's going on? So we're thinking in a lot of cases, depending on the storage rates at your elevator, that basically depending on what you want to do or how risky you want to be, price some of your grain, have some cash flow needs, and then enter the market back on either the futures or an option. And surprisingly enough, more and more of the firms have been saying just the straight futures rather than the options that cost something here, because they figure we're at the low end of the ranges. And I know out of two of the little conference calls this morning that I was involved in talking, that there was two different firms were recommending just using futures rather than options.
Yeah, so they believe that the harvest lows have been made then in that case.
That's what they're saying, and especially, I guess, they don't figure anybody's going to jump in and do all of it before the report tomorrow, and we'll sort of see whether that's a wise decision to jump into, because I think tomorrow's numbers will tell us whether the lows are in or not.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with you. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That, of course, is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, Tyson Foods yesterday announced it has taken a 5% ownership stake in Beyond Meat. That's a company that, per its website, develops alternatives to beef, chicken, and pork in order to improve human health, positively impact climate change, conserve natural resources, it says, and respect animal welfare. Tyson Foods, the world's largest meat processor, says the investment gives it exposure to a fast-growing segment of the protein market and helps it consider how best to serve a growing and diverse global population while staying focused on its animal protein business. Well, let's stay in the protein sector for the moment. Three U.S. dairy trade associations are releasing an economic analysis today showing the negative effects of geographic indications on U.S. farmers and consumers, a move meant to illustrate the economic consequences of U.S. negotiators backing down to their European Union counterparts over common cheese names. The issue has become a major sticking point in negotiations with the EU on TTIP, that's the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, with the European Commission arguing for protection of certain foods under the deal based on geographic origin. The EU argues the move would protect makers of cheeses like Parmesan or Feta, who say that foreign imitations should be distinguished by carrying different names. U.S. producers, on the other hand, worry that if EU negotiators win out, they may be forced to stop using generic names like Parmesan. We'll stay with trade deals, but skip over to the TPP, or the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Mexican economic officials are pushing for a vote on TPP to cement the deal. That's the thought of the economy secretary for Mexico, anyway, who is urging his country to ratify the TPP, regardless of what happens in the United States. He says voting for TPP would send a very important message to the rest of the countries on the commitment and conviction of creating this new global platform. He said in Spanish to the Mexican media outlet El Economista. We'll stay with trade for one more story. The American Journal of Transportation calls Russia a grain superpower as wheat exports from Russia surge. The journal says grains are propelling Russia's agriculture into a renaissance charged by the 45% drop in the ruble against the dollar over the last few years and bumper crops. Last season, Russia topped the U.S. in wheat exports for the first time in decades and is expected to extend those gains to displace the European Union from the top spot this year. Wheat exports from Russia are projected around 30 million metric tons, and President Vladimir Putin of Russia last month urged the country to not hurry in moving excess grain. Russia's agriculture ministry says the nation's all-grain crop was estimated at 110 to 115 million metric tons, the largest overall grain crop in 25 years. The EU, for its part, is also enjoying gains in wheat exports. The gains by Russia and the EU are coming mostly at the expense of the United States. And finally today, this story. The National FFA organization last week announced record-high student membership of 649,355. Current membership is 3% higher than in 2015. FFA says the number of FFA chapters also grew, increasing from 7,757 to 7,859. The top six student membership states are Texas, California, Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio, and Missouri. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. two things as we make our way through this Tuesday afternoon. You're working hard. I know that's the case. Take time for yourself sometime in the next hour. Shut the combine down. Take a 20-minute nap. Make sure you get 8 hours of sleep at night. That'll keep you safe out there as you get through the halfway, maybe more than that, a mark of the harvest season across Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Ohio, Kansas as well, and all those other places across the planet where they're in the midst of the harvest season. The second thing is you might want to take some time to sign up right now for your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. That's the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving, or the 22nd day of November. This is a day-long event. You can come early in the morning around 8 o'clock, and you'll get started with the annual membership meeting for the Illinois Corn Growers Association. If you're not a member or don't need to be a member of ICGA, then show up around 10:30. That's what you'll buy the ticket for. For our Farm Assets Conference, we'll have a whole bunch of our regular analysts at the program. Some of them will be up in front, some of them will be around the outside, but you'll be able to talk to them all. We'll do that, talk about the price of corn and soybeans, and go through a series of functions through the day that are related to the university and to the Farm Bill. So from the university side, we'll take a look at policy. From the Farm Bill side as well, we'll collect some information from you about how you feel about the upcoming Farm Bill and maybe what your expectations might be. And we'll discuss some of the research that's being done here on this campus, both as it's related to what's happening in your combine cab and in your home office and big data. It should be a great, really great Farm Assets Conference. It's just $30 when you sign up. The Farm Assets Conference will be held at the Marriott Hotel in Normal, Illinois, on the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving. That's the 22nd day of November. You can sign up right now at WILLAG.org. You know, as the presidential candidates argue over trade deals, the Department of Agriculture is rushing to finish a study before the Obama administration leaves office regarding the creation of a new trade office at USDA. The 2014 Farm Bill ordered a report to plan for a new office of an Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs. The move is a reorganization that Senate Agriculture Chairman Pat Roberts told USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack recently is key to passing trade deals like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. However, Roberts complained the report, due in 180 days, is now over 2 years late.
As you near the end of this administration, can you assure us that you will provide your strong forward thinking and recommendation for this reorganization and provide the report for this year? I think this is absolutely essential if we're going to have a breakthrough with the Pacific Rim trade deal, and for that matter, any trade deal that follows.
Secretary Vilsack apologized for the lateness of the study, but pointed out that Congress asked for not one, but two studies.
This is a very, very, very complicated issue that you've presented to us. It doesn't just simply involve setting up an undersecretary of trade. It really does take requires a look at all the equities within the USDA and outside the USDA relative to trade. And there are a multitude of equities. I was surprised at the complexity of this in terms of our team talking about this. But we will do what we can to make sure that this is teed up for the next administration.
Vilsack pointed out earlier the overlapping and competing jurisdictions within USDA and between USDA and other agencies on trade. Avoiding conflicts and duplication will be key to creating the new undersecretary post. But agricultural leaders see such an office as an important advocate for agriculture in pending and future trade agreements. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Be sure to visit our website at WILLAG.org. There you can purchase your tickets right now today. Don't wait for the Farm Assets Conference. That's Tuesday, November the 22nd. I'm going to tell you a lot about that over the next several days while you're still in the field, so you can get yourself ready for that in the winter meeting season. But pick up the tickets today. They're just $30. The Farm Assets Conference is in Normal, Illinois at the Marriott Hotel. More on that as we make our way through the next several days. Now let's check in on the agricultural weather forecast. Don Day is here. He's from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me about weather in the Midwest.
Well, we are going to be looking at a fairly active pattern. The Pacific Northwest and even portions of central and northern California are going to get a little stormy here over the coming week. And those systems are going to lose a lot of their steam hitting the West Coast, but will move across the northern plains states and take a dip south into the Midwest and Corn Belt. So the chances of a rain between today and into the early portions of next week, pretty good, along with some cooler temperature readings. So it's going to be more often than not active, and there's going to be ample opportunity for shower activity. Now, after that, it'll probably dry out a little bit, but in the next week or so, folks involved in harvest operations in the Midwest need to account for some occasional rain coming on through.
And the month of September was record warm. Do you think we can repeat that in the month of October?
I see certainly that it is going to end up probably being a warmer than normal October for a large part of the central and eastern United States, but not to the levels that we had in September. And one thing I think we're going to see at the last, let's say, full week of October are more in the way of colder systems coming into the U.S. So some of the above normal rates that we're at right now will be trimmed a bit by the end of the month.
Take a look at South America for me. They're then the beginning of their planting season.
As we look into the two key growing areas, it looks wet, especially Argentina. They are going to be looking at a pretty stormy and unsettled weather pattern there. And rainfall is likely going to be well above normal over all the key growing areas of Argentina. Now, Brazil, not as wet, but at least the southern and southwest provinces of Brazil are likely going to be picking up some of that rain that Argentina will get.
And I haven't asked anyone about China for a while. They, of course, are in their fall and in the midst of harvesting the second largest corn crop on the planet.
Yeah, they had a good year. They had a very good season. Nothing extreme happened, dry or wet. And it looks like, for the most part, at least here in the short term for any corn harvest, drier conditions are going to be found over the next week. Now, after that, they're likely going to see some cooler, wetter weather move on in, especially in the central and eastern areas.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. A couple of items tomorrow at 11 o'clock a.m. Central Time, noon in the Eastern Time Zone. The United States Department of Agriculture will release the monthly crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimates. You can check out my Twitter feed at Commodity Week if you follow Twitter. Otherwise, it'll be posted to the website at willag.org to see all of those numbers right as the release. That's at 11 o'clock tomorrow, an important event. We'll talk about those during the Closing Market Report. This is the second thing with Jerry Gahlke tomorrow. Have a great afternoon on the Combine. I'm Todd Gleason.